Explore the night skies with our large range of high-quality telescopes. Whether you're a novice or an astronomy expert, we have the right telescope for you in our Australian Geographic e-store. Explore the whole range and find the right telescope for you today. Go to www.australiangeographic.com.au/shop. That's www.australiangeographic.com.au/shop.
Hi, I'm Justin Walker, and welcome to this episode of Talking Australia. Today, I'm chatting to Joe Bonington, Master Adventure Fitness Trainer. Joe spends his days helping aspiring adventurers prepare physically and mentally for extreme activities such as climbing Everest and crossing the frozen Greenland in the dead of winter. I've been on the receiving end of Joe's no-holds-barred training philosophy. I'm here to tell you he's definitely no slouch. Thanks for joining me, Joe.
Cheers, mate. Absolute pleasure to be here.
Thanks, mate. And I'll start off by asking you, when you're obviously you're the son of legendary British climber Sir Christian Bonington, or Sir Chris Bonington, as he prefers to be called.
Yep.
I'm guessing your childhood was full of outdoor adventures from the start, but was that what sparked your lifelong interest in adventure itself?
Very good question. I've always been around adventure, and I grew up surrounded by, these wild men of the mountains with, in the 70s and early 80s, with the long hair and big beards and all of this and going out and doing some pretty amazing things. I was raised in the Lake District.
Nice and hilly there.
Given a lot of freedom as a child.
Yep.
So both me and my brother just used to spend days out on the fells. We'd go climbing with dad and we'd go out camping by ourselves from a very early age, from earlier than probably a lot of other parents had let their kids go out and do stuff by themselves. And I think that's where it all stemmed from. It did have its challenges as well. So I did actually have a little bit of a wobble in the middle. And, as teens, I think I grew up around all this adventure, which was absolutely fantastic. But I also had the pressures of a very famous dad and a very unconventional upbringing. There was a time during the 70s and 80s that there wasn't one year that me as a child wasn't going to a funeral or a memorial service of somebody who 3 months earlier had been bouncing me up and down on their knee or carrying me on their shoulders up the top of High Pike, which is the fell behind us.
Sure. By that you mean other climbers that you climb with your dad. And so
that took its toll, and not being able to understand it, with the child's mind, why do you keep doing this?
Yeah.
And being away for, this is back in the days when contact was via little blue envelopes.
Yep.
The old airmail and the trips were a lot longer. So dad would be away for a whole season at a time, etc. So there was a lot of that to compute. So I did actually have a wobble in the middle that coincided with my teens, funnily enough,
as these
wobbles do. Kind of went into my early 20s. I was quite lost. It actually took me to hit rock bottom. I actually ended up getting quite heavily involved in drugs and petty crime and all kinds of things. I come from this amazing, loving family and adventurous dad, and I'd grown up and loved all that and hit my teen years and just went bang and went down another path for a little while. But it was actually because of that drew me back to adventure. I ended up in quite serious trouble and was sitting in a jail cell contemplating life and what had got me to that point. And it was after a court case, dad decided to take me on a trip with him. So we'd done all lots of things, and going to the Alps and done stuff together.
Yep.
But I'd never been on an expedition with him, never been on a full-blown trip. So my brother was in the similar predicament. He was struggling at school, and both of us had left school early at 16. Yep. And we then went off with Dad, and we went up around the back of Kilimanjaro. So we did Kilimanjaro, but you know, it being Dad, it wasn't by the normal route. We actually circumnavigated the mountain and went back over the Kredna Glacier, which unfortunately, due to global warming, is hardly any of it left, where it was a decent-sized glacier for us to climb up and over and onto at that time. And it was actually standing on top of that. There was a moment when I was going very naturally at altitude. I was going very, very well, and Dad obviously was. And my brother and my dad's brother and other members of the party were actually a fair bit behind us. And Dad said, "Oh, look, I think we'd better wait for them." We're past Gilman's Point. We're very close to the top. And Dad said, "Look, I think we'd better wait for the others." And I said, "Oh, look, I just need to go and spend some time by myself."
Yep.
And so I just carried on up to the summit by myself. And Dad, I didn't realise Dad was looking after me, crying his eyes out.
Oh, wow.
And I got to the top, and I just felt this power, this emotion, all this, everything. I was crying for all the people who died, all the from my childhood, for I don't know, wrongs imagined or right or whatever, and just felt this emotion and power surge through the mountain. I was sobbing. And I just spent, I was up there for, I don't know, a good half hour by myself before the others came up. And I had this most amazing view, and it was one of those really clear days where you could see forever, could see right the way across to Mount Kenya. You could almost see the curvature of the earth, and it was, pretty amazing. And it was at that point that I really knew that I wanted to become a student of change.
Yep, gotcha.
And that's what I'm about. I actually went back into the music industry and spent quite some time then. So it was a slow transition, but I got, over the next couple of years, I then got myself very fit and emigrated over here with my wife, who I met in London. She's Australian. And it was during that process that I decided to get myself really, really fit. I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Yeah, sure.
But I'd started doing a lot of personal development and things like that. And I'd spent a few years by now in the music industry, and I came over here, and I just, the music industry is a very shallow industry, and I wanted to do something real, and I was trying to work out what it was next I wanted to do. And so when I got over here, I was raised in the country back home. I knew a lot about the fauna, the flora, nature, and the whole system over there. I didn't know anything here. So I took myself off to TAFE, did a bush regen course, went and worked part-time at Paddy Palin, worked the other part of the time in the bush whilst I tried to work out what's coming next. And then and it was during that time I went on another expedition, and I went and climbed Dangar, an unclimbed peak in the Kanchenjunga region of Nepal. And it was whilst I was out there, I saw a lot of people who should have been having, well, not a lot, because it only just opened up. There was five trips we met in that area.
Yep.
And there was people there who should have been having the time of a lifetime. And they were looking at their shoes instead of looking at the mountains. Oh, wow.
Struggling to get up there.
They were struggling. And that's when I thought, there's something in this. And so came back to Sydney and came up with this concept called Trek Fit.
Yep.
And when I took myself off and got qualified as a personal trainer, so that was 20-odd years ago now, I quickly realised that, the adventure industry isn't what it is now.
Yeah.
So I quickly realized I was going to starve to death. So I went and joined Fitness First and started, you know, training overweight mums, sure, and stressed out executives and and all of this. But all the time, I'm a bit of a geek on the side. And this is the one thing through all those dark days, I've always had this love of learning.
Yep.
And so I was just doing any course I could. I was trying to find out any information. There's very little information on that related to adventure sports,
yep,
and wilderness activities. So I was looking at research, looking at papers around more traditional sports, field sports, endurance, yep, sports, Olympic sports, and how I could transfer the knowledge that had been gained there,
yeah,
and how I could transfer that into the stuff that I loved, which was getting out into the wilds, into the wilderness, into the bush, up on mountains, sure, etc. So started doing that, and then slowly getting more and more clients who were and seeking out people who really wanted to go and do more extreme things, yep, or just wanted to go trekking,
yeah,
etc. And just built from there. Yeah.
It must have been, you must have been the only person specializing in that back in those days, because it is such a unique sort of niche, I guess, in terms of training and fitness and what your end goals are and things like that.
Totally. I mean, look, there's a few people, a few more people on the case now, but as far as Australia's concerned, and that, actually, sorry, get that. Let me take that back a bit. There's a few people out there, but not so many who were into the actual the science of strength and conditioning. Yep. So I took those people who were originally into the outdoors,
yep,
and they just went off and did a Cert 3, Cert 4 in personal training, and treated it as personal training. So they did all the, you know, 3 sets of 12, yeah, and all these kind of bodybuilding routines and what, and just kind of tacked it on to what they, sure, were doing. So it was fitness tacked on to outdoor, yep, stuff and whatever. So, and I'd never been about that. I'd always thought, this is about performance,
yep,
and this is about excellence. And so I'd always, even though I hadn't been to university, hadn't gone and got an exercise sports science degree, mm-hmm, or a degree in sports-based strength and conditioning, I studied everything I possibly could on sports-based strength and conditioning, because these are sports, these are activities.
Yeah.
It's not, there's a massive difference between exercise and training, you know. So
definitely, yep,
when all training contains aspects of exercise, but not all exercise is training. And people have got to get that through their, yeah, through their heads. There's a lot of time people do it because, oh, that, and they think, okay, if I do this and it makes me feel sweaty and my heart rate's up, it must be doing me good.
Yep.
And that's not right. We don't train. There's not one Olympic level athlete that we train to get a gold medal like that.
Yeah. So it's all about a goal, isn't it? Like you're, yeah, so specific about goals.
Very, very specific about, you know, what is it you are training for? What are the things that we need to do, the processes we need to do to actually get you to be the best you can be for that goal, yep, at that time, at that point.
Yeah. And you've had some pretty crazy goals funded up towards you, I suppose, too, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we've had, you know, we've had some pretty cool, there's all the big obvious ones, you know, we've, and this is where I think I've been really, really lucky. So I think I've trained more Everest summiters than anybody else in Australia.
Yeah, wow.
Not in the world, but in Australia, definitely. And I've trained 8 people to summit Everest, which has been fantastic. But then lots of other straight mountaineering goals as well. Yep. You know, so I've been training a lad who's got eyes on Nanga Parbat. Mm-hmm. I've been training another lad who's polar exploration and overland journeys. He's just Gareth Andrews. He's just done a first.
Yes, yep.
Yeah. So he's just done. Yeah. You guys know Gareth very Gareth, well. Yeah. So I've looked after Gareth for years. So he first came to me after doing the Himalayan 250. So he did a 250k multi-stage endurance race through the Annapurna, wow, region, and then I have been looking after him ever since then, really. So as all his expeditions and trips have got bigger and bigger and bigger, which is has been an absolutely fantastic journey. We've had two channel swimmers, English channel swimmers. We've had, what else? Multitude of multi-stage races. And it's good.
And it's not just the elites either. It's just the everyday person who may want to trek to the top of Kilimanjaro, for example, that you would happily say, well, that's your goal. Let's work towards it and let's do it.
Well, that's the thing. So we really are about none of my guys. We're not training people like Kilian Jornet and people like that. None of my guys are actually professional adventurers. All of them are ordinary people with huge and extraordinary goals. So for example, Gareth Andrews is a full-time doctor. He's an anaesthetist.
Yeah.
All of my runners, now we put plenty of people on podiums. They're all podium runners. None of them are professionals.
Yeah.
You know, none of them, they're all just really, really keen, really eager, and just want to give it a really, really good crack. And that's actually what really gets my juices flowing. I was actually talking to somebody about it yesterday. Your top end athletes and even your people, your really focused people who are kind of borderline and might one day transition into professional adventure athletes like Gareth.
Yep.
Gareth's always been, you know, Gareth was a schoolboy athlete. He represented Scotland in rugby. He's always been very focused and always very determined. Don't get me wrong, he is an absolute pleasure to train.
Yeah.
He's such a top bloke and such an awesome soul. It's also, but seeing the people who are like that, seeing the people who actually aren't sure they can actually make this.
Yeah, yeah.
Seeing the people who you've really got to get into their heads and that they've committed to this thing and they're not sure that they can do it and they don't know how and they're scared.
Yep.
And it's seeing those people and either on some of them, on some of the treks that I lead, etc., watching their faces as they get to whichever destination we're at and they're looking up around at these mountains around them and thinking, wow.
Yeah,
I've done this. You know,
it's that sense of achievement. And that's where I know training with you myself, it's that mental fitness, the mental strength that you really do focus on that people seem to forget with the, of course, you need the physical strength and the endurance and everything else, but your mind has got to be strong and in the right place to make it a successful sort of end game, I guess.
Oh, totally. There's one of the few people who are in my field, one of the few people who I really, really respect for their knowledge. Out there, there's the two guys wrote a book called Training for the New Alpinism. That's Steve House and Scott Johnson, based out of the States. And in their book, they talk about I've forgotten who it is now that they interviewed, but it was a Croatian climber, I think, or a Czech climber, who they'd talked with, and saying that when you get to that level, it is 20% physical ability and 80% mindset.
Yep.
The great thing that I love about adventure and the fact that it is this day after day journey and it's this conduit for change is this isn't just something that's going to be over in 2 hours or 4 hours, etc. You know, you've got to do 15 kilometers a day, day after day. There's a certain amount of uncertainty. You know, you could be absolutely game fit. You could be match ready, on top of your form and everything. You don't know what nature's going to throw at you.
No, that's a big variable, isn't it?
You know, and then you have other stuff. You know, you'll have stuff. So you've got, you know, really crap weather comes in. You know, so you've got inclement weather. And then you've got the stress. You know, maybe you're up in the Himalayas, and maybe it's a trek, and you're going through an area that's got some really bad rockfalls. You've got a herd of yaks just appeared, you know, 200 feet above you, and they're dislodging rocks that are, you know, snowballing and becoming the size of small cars, and and you know, and you're already tired, and then you're having to deal with that, and then you get to the other side, and you've still, you know, because of the hold up with that, you're going to be walking for another 4 hours in the dark, and then the next day you've got to do it all again.
Yes, it's a thing outside your control that can affect you, really throw you off, isn't it?
And that's life.
It is.
You know, that really, really, that is just such a great analogy for life. So that's what we are about. The bonus of what I do, love training all the people who are really focused and that and have got their goals sorted out. And I love the people who come to us who they just know they want more and they're not sure what that is. And if we can get them to go on an adventure, and if we can actually help facilitate that, then that's absolutely fantastic. You know, because there's tons of adventurers out there who I feel are, you know, doing it for the wrong reasons. Like all the peat baggers.
Yeah, sure.
And there's a few out there. I'm not going to mention any names, but there's a couple of famous ones. One very famous English one, who some of his summits have been called into disrepute, and I just don't get that. Really, really don't get how much ego can take over and cause you're totally missing the point and missing all the lessons that could be learned.
Yep.
That could help your relationships, your life, the people around you, the culture that you're in, everything.
Yeah, it's a whole sound of mind, sound of body, and it extends itself throughout life, like you said.
Yeah, totally.
Subscribe to our AG magazine for 6 months for just $30 and save 33% on the newsstand price. That's 3 issues of our award-winning magazine delivered to your home for just $30. Plus, you will also receive exclusive benefits, including 10% off all products purchased in our e-store. So don't wait. Go to www.australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia for our special offer. That's www.australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia.
In terms of training, I mean, there's the mental side, the physical side. Food is a big thing for you guys as well to focus on for clients and things like that. Do you ever get a person who is hard to keep on that track when they're training, or they, because they have those goals set, they are a lot easier to, not so much manage, it's probably the wrong term, but to keep them in the right sort of frame of mind?
Everybody has bad days. I have bad days. You know, it's, none of us are superhuman. It's just how we manage it and deal with it and the excuses that we tell ourselves. So one of the big things I'm huge on is getting our value and our what I call our greater life vision in line with our goals. Because the thing is, people set goals all the time, and so many goals people don't achieve. So many goals, so many people say, oh, look, I really, really want to do this.
Yeah.
But then they let it drift. Or they might say, okay, yeah, I'm going on this trek. I really want to go on this trek, and that's great, but I really, really need to lose 10 kilos. Yep. As well, so I need to sort my diet out.
Yeah.
Now, they've still got that goal. They've got this fantastic thing that they know, but they keep on procrastinating. They keep on just putting it off. Yep. They keep on not doing, you know, and they keep on lying to themselves.
Yes, yeah, fooling themselves.
Yeah, and so we have a process. I call it the True North process. So I believe that everybody has a deep set of core drivers and a deep set of values. Most of us haven't identified them, but we've all got them. So I like going through processes with people where we'll actually go through all of that. And if we can, before people set their goals, we actually need to find out what their core drivers and what their values are. Because if you've got somebody where all their values are around fun and enjoyment and being the bon viveur and immediacy and all of this, that's not really, really well going to fit in well with really, really long-term goals, etc. So we need to do some work around that.
Yep.
So we have this process where we take people through. I created a model called the Empower Model, where the E in Empower stands for explore. So basically the first thing we do before we actually look at your goals is we actually look at what is your greater life purpose.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that you want to have people, the people who love you, remember you for when you cark it,
yeah.
You know. One thing that's going to happen to all of us, we're all going to cark it. There's no getting away from that. And so what is that greater life vision? And I don't mean what we've achieved, like money we've amassed, houses we've got and all that kind of stuff. You know, it's for me. I want the people who love me to write on my tombstone, if I have a tombstone. Was much loved. He showed he cared, and he made an impact.
Yeah,
that's what I want. So no more detail. It's very big, very high level.
Yeah,
and then off the back of that, we then tack the values that go alongside that. And so we search out, so what are that person values? You know, for me, it's community, it's teaching, it's education. It's a tearing, I have this saying, tearing chunks out of life.
Yep.
And that's one of my values.
Yeah.
But it's also giving chunks back as well.
Sure.
And also authenticity. So I hope I can swear on this, but I don't, you know, it's no bullshit. You know, it's tell it like it is, be very, very straight up, be authentic. There's a concept about your word is law in your universe. And there's so many of us, and I catch myself doing it, saying things that we're going to do, saying things to please people, saying things for this.
Yeah, totally.
And then not keeping up with it.
Yep.
You know, so is your word your law in your universe? And then as soon as you get to a stage that it is, that you are authentic, then it makes a lot easier to do things. Yeah. And you're also a lot more bloody careful about what you promise and what you utter. Oh, I'm going to lose 10 kilos.
Yeah, exactly.
So we do that. So that's the explore part. That's the first part. And then we do the mapping. And mapping is looking at your goals and looking at the strategies to get to those goals. So you might have a goal here. Maybe the greater goal is to greater life goal is to climb a mountain on every continent. Yeah. And then the supporting goals for that would be, you know, what size mountains, you know, is it a 6,000 meter peak? Is it 7,000 meter peak, et cetera? Or maybe it's the goal is to have an adventure a year. Maybe it's to do a road trip with your family, whatever. So we're getting more into those goals.
Yeah, sure.
And the reason why I like maps and like the terminology of maps is people get very, very rigid in their goal setting process. But I think it's most important to have a destination. And like, if you look at any map, you can usually find several ways.
There's more than one road.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then if one doesn't work, we keep on trying that road. But if it doesn't work, we then find another route. We don't change the destination.
No.
But we change the route to get there. So we then go through that. And then our other process is the power. And the power is just one word. And that is just taking massive action. And we get our people being stronger at power by daily practice.
Yep.
So I'm really, really big into things that are infinite. So things like I've got here in my bag, my juggling balls. So it's things like juggling and handstands and stuff like that that you can't ever. You can't say there's a finish point. Oh, I've nailed handstands.
Yep.
That's it. There's always a progression. The same with juggling. You know, okay, I can do three ball juggling. Let's go to four ball juggling.
Sure.
Let's go to five ball juggling, and it goes on like that. And that teaches us to fail. It teaches us the importance of practice. And the same with meditation. I meditate for between 10 and 20 minutes every day. You know, it's not long, but it's a practice. And I'm actually part of an agreement group that we keep each other honest and we each make an agreement and we check in every day and we must do that agreement every day of the year, no matter what.
Yep.
And I'm part of a group that checks in on in on each other with that. So, and those, that teaches us discipline, and discipline helps us commit to action.
Yep.
So doing things like this, you know, people think, you know, what has juggling and doing handstands and meditating got to do with climbing mountains, skiing across tundra, or swimming swimming cold currents? It's got everything to do with it. You know, it, and apart from anything, those who the juggling and the handstands actually help with spatial awareness and proprioception, which is a really, really good for athletic development. And the meditation really helps with the mindset as well. So, so they're some of the things that we put into place. It's a very different approach.
Yeah, definitely.
And one that we just find really, really works for our people. It's not everybody's cup of tea. But that's all right. People can drink a cup of tea elsewhere.
Exactly. So. But you must be so satisfied when you see someone come in, not sure what they want to do, and all over the place mentally and physically. And then at the end, when they've done, they've achieved their goal, and you guys have worked all the way through that with them, must be pretty satisfying.
Oh, it is. It is the best feeling, you know, to see the change that I know I've done my job when it's when they get back from their trip. And wherever, and it hasn't just been about that photo on the top or the photo wherever it was at the end, etc. When they actually come back to me with some stories and some analogies and things around how it's affected them and stuff that they're doing now and stuff that's changed. And the other thing that really, really gets to me as well is when a lot of the adventures and the places we go to are involved in countries where there's a lot of different cultures. And when I know that somebody has fully immersed and engaged with the culture in a true sense of the word of the word, then I know they've got it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I know that they've really, you know, because it is, it's about this is, if we can explore the world, explore ourselves whilst we're doing it, and explore other people, explore cultures. You know, I mean, that's got to be a good thing. And
totally, like you said, it's beyond just the physical. It's totally beyond the physical, but the rewards are so much higher and more satisfying because of it.
Totally, you know, it's if this stuff challenging ourselves physically and mentally makes us more robust and more resilient people, but I also think it makes us doing it in those kind of environments also. Makes us more empathic and makes us better team players. So it's going to help everything around us. It's going to give us more sympathy to different people, different groups of people. So God knows we need that at the moment in this world, you know, with all this separation and segregation and fear-mongering and hate. You know, it gets us closer to other people. It makes us realise that they're just going through all their own stuff, and that we're going through our stuff, and most of this stuff is pretty similar.
Yes,
you know,
for sure.
And that the world, despite all its problems and despite global warming and everything that's going, this is an amazing planet. There's still so much we
need to make the most of it when we're here.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
we've got to do the most, and we really do have to do something to help the planet, because
yes, I agree, mate. The one thing I've just draw back to when you were younger and through the wild and loose times and in jail. Did you ever see yourself, even back then, when you had that epiphany on the mountain, that you'd be where you are now as one of the most highly regarded adventure fitness trainers? You know, did you ever see that?
There was a dark. It's funny when I was a kid, so before my teens, yes.
Yep.
You know, I knew I was going to do something. I had all these dreams and hopes and aspirations and all of this. And you know, I've had a fantastic role model, you know, in my dad. My dad has spent his whole life living his passion, living his passion and doing very well out of it. But then through the dark days, I was properly lost. I was.
Sounds like it.
I was. Yeah, really. Yeah. Anyway, so but it was then coming out of that, I really, really knew. I think I think what it was, I'm lucky that because I had that, I had the anchor, I had something to grip onto.
Yep.
That I had a point of reference. You know, I'll be honest, there's people who I used to hang around with in those days, and I've lost contact with 99% of them.
Yeah.
But there was one of them who I just bumped into accidentally a good few years ago when I was back visiting London, and he was still in the same place. He was he was his brain was fried, and he was a mess, and he was, you know, he was in a lot of trouble, and I just thought, wow, you know, there, but for the grace of God,
yes.
You know, and it really, really brought it home to me, and I think that was, you know, here was a lad, I was hanging around, here's me, I'd come from this adventurous, forward-thinking, striving, high-achieving family and loving, nurturing family, but I'd still thrown myself into the darkest cesspools. But the lads I was hanging around with, you know, they came from families who were career criminals.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They'd been three generations of bludging on the dole and you know, family abuse and all of that kind of stuff. Now, I hadn't seen any of that.
Yep.
You know, I hadn't been, it's funny, somebody actually once said to me and said, I think you were just finding a different kind of adventure.
possibly, yeah.
You know, and it was, I thought this was all exciting, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, dodgy council flats and people with, won't go into it. Anyway, maybe it was. Maybe I was just finding it was an easy road to a different kind of adventure the time.
Yep.
And the only one I felt I could access. Yeah. I can remember a period, like Dad at home in those days in the 80s was very, very famous in the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody calls me Joe. That's not actually my name.
No.
My name's Daniel.
Yeah.
Joe was a nickname that I adopted, and I clung on to it.
Yep.
And when I left school at 16 and went, I moved out home at 16 as well, even though, you know, loved mum and dad and all that,
yep.
But I just wanted to get away. I didn't tell anybody what my surname was at all.
Yeah, wow.
And when I moved down to London, I didn't, it was just Joe.
Yep. Interesting.
Just Joe. Just didn't tell. I didn't want anybody to know, because I'd spent my whole life growing up with, you know, little old ladies in the streets of Carlisle coming up and pulling me by my cheek. You're going to grow up to be like your dad, you know, and all of this. And I'd suffer in my earlier. I went to this is England in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, it was a recession.
Yeah.
End of Thatcher's Britain. It was rough as guts. There was a lot of fighting. The height of football violence. And Carlisle, where I'm from, is, you know, it had one of the top 10 drug problems in Britain, and very, very high rates of crime. All the industry had gone.
Yeah.
And they were all the people I was hanging around with. I just wanted to be, here's us, we've been raised, my mum was a vegetarian, and our house was filled with lots of stuff from India and smelled of incense and you know, and we had all of this. But me and my brother, we wanted to go and sit in our mate's two up, two down council house with, you know, flock wallpaper and three geese on the wall. little Toby jugs on the mantelpiece and eat pie, peas and chips. You know, that's, we wanted to be like a lot of kids do. They want to just fit in.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
with everybody,
fit, yeah.
And that's what we saw as fitting in.
Yeah,
and so that's what we.
That's
what
hilarious.
That's what we. I know. We had all this amazing stuff, and we didn't want any of it. You know, we were. Yeah, it was quite.
Does your dad laugh about it now and shake his head about?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. He does. You know, and it's you know, we've talked about it a lot, and I'm very lucky. I get to do, not so much now. Dad's got a lot older now, but he's still doing. I talked to him the other day. He did a 13, 14K walk across the fells the other day, and he's you know, it's 85. He gets in about 8-9K a day.
Yeah, good.
And
that's amazing. But
we were talking about all this not so long back, and he said, like any dad, you know, he was just hurting. He wanted to help, but felt it needed to come from us.
Yes.
Before, you know, nobody can help. Nobody can help you until you want to help yourself.
Yep.
And he always talks about, he can remember one time coming down and grabbing us from London and taking me down for a weekend's climbing down in Cornwall to see if that would make a difference and spark me on. And the whole weekend, I just wanted to go out clubbing. I just wanted to go, you know, I was right in the thick of it, and I wanted to, I don't know, go and swallow some pills and go. So
it's hard to see that version of you after seeing you obviously going to your gym and seeing.
I know. You know, and it really was. It seems like a completely different world.
Yeah.
I think the great thing is, you know, I've been doing what I do for the last 20 years. And yep. I am seen as, I'm very lucky, I'm seen as an expert at what I do. And I've worked very hard.
Yeah,
at
for sure.
I've studied a lot, and like I said, been a student of change for the last 30 years. And I think my life experiences have actually really, really helped me. I'm very grounded.
Yep.
I can talk to anybody at any level, you know, so I've sure. got, you know, from clients, from high-end corporate to top-level athletes to, you know, we've got people like Sammy Sims, a current Olympian snow sports, going for a third Olympics this year, yep. training out of our place, to overweight mums and dads, and then also to kids who are you know, in their early 20s and struggling. You know, they can't put anything past me because I've been there, mate.
Right. You sure have? That's right.
don't put one over me. It's not going to work. But. But yeah, so you know, and I have very few regrets. In recent years with Dad, I've had some amazing experiences. You know, I invite Dad every now and then on some of my commercial trips that I run, sure. some of the
yep.
treks.
Yep.
It's double-edged sword. I get double whammy. So I get. Daddy's good at putting bums on seats, so we always pay a premium for those for those trips. But also, I get to spend. That's two of us spending a month in the environment that we're both at our most comfortable and happiest. You know, I love being out in the Himalaya. I'm not a high level technical climber like my dad. I'm not a mountaineer. I don't climb, even though I've done some mountaineering. I don't class myself as a mountaineer. I love the mountains and the wild sure. places. I love being there. I love the culture. I love the people. I love the physicality. I love just getting out there and getting amongst it.
Yeah.
And so to spend those intense moments of time, so 3-4 weeks with my dad in Nepal or in Bhutan or places like that, we're pretty lucky because a lot of people can live 5 streets away from
exactly.
their dad.
Yep.
And not spend the intense amount of time. And also in that environment, that adventure environment where you're reliant on each other, you're really having to be aware and be present.
Yep.
So they're really, really special times. And they have been fantastic. And, you know, if I hadn't gone down the path I'd gone down and had ended up in that cell and had that epiphany, I'd have probably come out of what I was doing and gone down at a different path, but I don't know. Yeah. Could I have ended up in some weird corporate world?
That's a frightening thought.
Wearing a suit or scares the shit out of me. And I might not have had those these experiences that I have with Dad.
Subscribe to our AG magazine for 6 months for just $30 and save 33% on the newsstand price. That's 3 issues of our award-winning magazine delivered to your home for just $30. Plus, you will also receive exclusive benefits, including 10% off all products purchased in our e-store. So don't wait. Go to www.australiangeographic.com.au/talkingaustralia for our special offer. That's www.australiangeographic.com.au www.joebonington.com/talkingaustralia.
Mate, one final question regarding Joe's base camp, which is your gym, obviously. You have that goal board on the, at the entrance yeah. there. So everyone writes their goals on for the year or for whatever time they're training yeah. there for. Have you ever seen something that's made you sort of think twice about they could do it or you hadn't heard of it or it was going to be a big job to get them there? Been one that stood out at all?
Oh, there's a few where I've thought, oh, that'll be a push. That's a stretch goal. But I love stretch goals.
Yep.
You know, so I'm never going to turn...
Lucky I'm going there myself.
Yeah,
then,
yeah. yeah. There's, I'm never going to turn anybody away from the goal. What I do like to do, I do like to have reality checks.
Yep.
And so I'll sit down with somebody and we look at, okay, this is the goal here.
Sure.
This is where we're at now. This is everything in between. So, you know, what experience do you have of that goal? You know, where do you need to be? You know, yeah. if it was somebody who has never climbed before and they want to do, I don't know, let's pick an easy one, Everest, okay?
Yep.
Which I don't like, you know, everybody sees Everest as this ultimate yes. goal.
Yeah, I know what you mean though.
And I have it's a legitimate goal. It's a great goal. Don't know if it's mountaineering in the truest sense of the word
no.
Anymore, but it is a goal, and it is also a dangerous goal.
Yeah.
But when I see people who get so it is a great example in the fact because it's one of those goals that people just think about that, and they don't think of the best way to do it. I did an interview some years back just with my dad, and we asked him the question, and I produce a little video clip that's on our YouTube channel that we've called The Craft.
Yep.
Where he talks about that, and he does it really succinctly. And it really is about, you know, people ask him all the time about what should I do to climb Everest? And, you know, and he says, start here.
Yeah.
You know, learn the craft. You know, start rock climbing. And then once you've done some rock climbing, go and find a small alpine. Go over to New Zealand. Go and do some alpine peaks there. Once you've done that, go and find a 6,000-meter peak. The trouble is, yes, you can. Technically, you could get somebody to haul you up Everest. And now everybody's doing the speed ascents as yes. well, where they're doing all their pre-acclimatization in altitude chambers, etc. And they can do that. But what are the life experiences you're missing out on if you don't do this whole journey in between?
You think it's because of this perceived no one's got any time concept that everyone keeps on saying, I haven't got time to do that, I haven't got time to do this, let's want to do that one thing and that's it. That's
but
the whole
I think
conception.
That's bullshit. I think that I think they're kidding themselves.
Yep.
And that takes me back to I love that Buddhist saying, the man who hasn't got time to meditate for 20 minutes should meditate for an hour, you know.
Nice.
And it really is, you know, if don't rush at these things,
no.
you know, learn your craft, take enjoyment of the journey.
Yeah.
You know, and that this is why I think you find a lot of people do Everest and they never go to the mountains again.
Yep.
It was just Everest. It wasn't actually the mountain.
No.
It was the standing on top and waving your little flag and getting the photo and see ya.
Yeah.
And that's sad. It is an achievement. I'm not going to take that away from anybody. So you know, in case I cop any flack over this, but it is an achievement. And really, I'm missing the point.
Yes.
You know, and I think that doing that journey, that's why some of the stuff we do, we do these things. We have these things called Extraordinary Sundays at the gym, where once a quarter we'll go and pick an activity that's just a bit different that we want everybody to get involved in.
Yep.
And it's like if it's something that's involving mountains, we don't necessarily want the people who are all really, really experienced in the mountains to be on it. We want the people who aren't. If it's involving water, we don't want the people who are really, really, you know, great kayakers and all that to be doing it. We want the people who are normally in the mountains to be doing it. Just to do something different. We got this hashtag this year, hashtag do something different.
Yep.
You know, let's broaden our experiences. You know, let's get out there and expand our comfort zones.
Yeah.
You know, this really is the whole thing. I've got this Actually, I wrote about for you guys the nine foundations of an adventure mindset, you know, and, you know, in that it really is about enjoying the journey and enjoying all parts of the journey. You know, those bits when it's freezing bloody cold, you're soaked through to the skin and all of that. That's part of the experience.
It is. It definitely is. Yeah. It makes it all much more worth it. You realise the effort that's gone in and you appreciate what you've done to get to there.
Yeah.
And you can keep on going with the rest of the journey before you finish.
It's exactly. Not as though,
and then do it again somewhere else.
Yeah, totally. Totally. You know, and it's look at the ways, train properly to do it. Do things properly. Do things well. And give everything your best shot. Give everything 100%.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Know?
And but when I say 100%, that doesn't mean just go hell for leather. That's not what I'm saying. But do things properly.
Yep, sure. What about yourself? Maybe you're putting something on the board this year for a goal, or
I've been thinking about this. What I want to do. I've been working my butt off the last few years. I really want to do something with my daughters.
Yep.
They're teenagers and they're fast growing up. Before I know it, they're not going to want to do something with Dad. So my youngest daughter especially is really keen to do an overland trip.
Okay.
So we've been toying with the ideas with that. So what I want to do first is do a little trial run and do a shorter trip and see how she handles it.
Yep.
See if she can handle a couple of weeks rough and without
Wi-Fi. Sure.
That's the biggest problem is, for today's generation. You know, she goes, "Oh yeah, I really want to do I want to do an overland journey." She was inspired by the Joneses.
Oh yes, of course.
Yeah, yep. she well, we took her to see the screening of the Joneses film and she came, "Oh yeah, I want to do an overland trip. I want to travel through the center and all that." And and I was going, "You know, there's no Wi-Fi." "Oh, isn't there?" So it's like, no. So, you know, we've done overnighters and she's done her Outward Bound and all that, but I need to go and do, you know, a good solid week's worth of walking,
yep,
and then maybe a 2-week trip. And if she handles that, I'd actually like to put together a proper, a really good trip, a non-commercial trip. I'm not talking about doing Larapinta or something. Find somewhere, track a route, and do it.
That'd be awesome.
Do it properly. Yeah. So I'd say that would be my next major goal.
Yep.
It also ties in well with COVID because we can't go anywhere anyway.
That's plenty of time.
So, but yeah. Other goals that I've got, I'd like to do some remote exploration of Nepal.
Yep.
I'm not sure yet. I've got a good mate of mine, Bill Crozier, who's always my expedition doctor, is always encouraged me to come over on one of his trips. He loves exploring all up around Dolpo and around those regions.
Okay.
And he's always chasing snow leopards.
Excellent.
So, you know, maybe something like that. But we've got to see what the world looks like in the next couple of years and where we can go. So
yes,
I think I'm going to be exploring around Australia.
That's not a bad idea anyway, really.
No, exactly. I mean, yeah. I absolutely love, you know, I got here in 98 and there's just so much there's so much to see, so much I've already done, but so much that I haven't done. You could spend a lifetime exploring Australia and you still wouldn't cover all the ground.
No. Well, that brings me to the last question. In terms of someone's goal you've had in the gym, has there ever been something going, "Oh, I'd like to do that myself"?
I've got
John Muir?
Yeah, sorry, the John Muir Trail. We've got one of our guys, Alex, and I don't know whether he's been able to do it. He just sorted out all his passes and everything just before COVID hit. So
he's been treading water since.
So, you know, just doing stuff like that would be really exciting. So that was one goal that was up on the board. Other goals that have been on the board I'd like to do. I sometimes have amadablam.
Yes.
I had that on my own gold board for a while.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Di Westaway, she climbed it quite a few years ago, and ever since I talked to her about
it.
Ooh, that sounds
I know Di.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, so, and yeah, so I wonder about doing, that. I don't know if it's doing a peak is as high on my priority list now as overland journeys.
Yes. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's, I've got more risk averse as I've got older.
You do, and kids as well, I think, as well. Yeah, definitely. So,
and the other thing I wouldn't mind exploring, actually, that I haven't done before is doing a paddle safari and getting out on a sea kayak and doing something.
Yes, I've done one of those in Canada for 9 days in the Haida Gwaii. It is great. The water's very relaxing.
Yeah.
I think, and just, yeah.
So we've got a, so do you know Sian Gresser?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Sian's one of the base camp crew, and I find her very inspirational as well. So, you know, first woman to paddle across the Bass Strait.
Yep.
And she's one of our base camp crew. And I've been talking to her. We're actually going to be running some strength and conditioning workshops for paddlers as well.
Wow. Okay.
We're actually doing a series of workshops around different areas. So we're going to be doing some strength and conditioning workshops for mountaineers, strength and conditioning workshops for paddling, strength and conditioning workshops for bikepacking, and all of the bits and pieces as well.
Well, mate, I better get myself back down there next week anyway.
Yeah, I think you have.
And thanks a lot for your time too, Joe. It's been great,
mate,
talking to you.
Absolutely, real pleasure. And thank you so much for inviting me. And, you know, you guys, the AusGeo Adventures is just... and AusGeo, just such awesome, awesome magazines.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have you on. Brilliant. Cheers again.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks. That's it for today's episode of Talking Australia. If you have questions or comments, feel free to reach out. Write us an email, podcast@australiangeographic.com, or find us on Instagram @AustralianGeographic. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. Thanks for listening. Until next time.